Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It did not sound like this 20 years ago today in Kigali, Rwanda, when that nation's tragic genocide began. The sounds you're hearing there from the more joyful remembrances taking place today of the Rwandan genocide that killed at least 800,000 people and by some accounts well over a million. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power is representing the United States. 20 years ago, she was one of the journalists who helped bring the killing in Rwanda to the attention of the world. Another American observing this nation's grief and hope is humanitarian, public health entrepreneur, and local businessman in Kigali, Josh Ruxin. Ruxin is a professor at Columbia University's Mailman Center for Public Health. His book, A Thousand Hills to Heaven, Love, Hope, and a Restaurant in Rwanda, tells the story of how he and his wife, Alyssa, went to Rwanda to open a restaurant and help the country rebuild. It was an adventure that taught them a lot about Rwanda, about the limits of aid and philanthropy, and it taught them a lot about themselves.
I think that probably the greatest stress on the marriage has always been life in Rwanda from a lot of different perspectives. We are part of a much bigger family than just ourselves, than just our three kids who are now nearly 7, 5, and 2 and don't really know any other places home than Rwanda. And really, Heaven Restaurant was our first child in some sense. We feel stress that comes from dealing with the grind of daily poverty and how that impacts the people around us who we love, who we care about, and with whom we work.
What's it like to get a knock at the door and some very lovely ladies are explaining that you have a surprise in your garden?
Yes, soon after we moved into the home that is still our home in Kigali, we were informed that there was a body buried in our backyard, a young man who had been murdered during the height of the genocide. We, of course, welcomed them into our home, and a couple of weeks later, they came through and dug up the body, which you would have thought would have been an incredibly somber event. But as it turned out for that family, knowing where their kin was buried, knowing that he was there, and knowing that they could give him a proper burial made it a celebration instead of the most somber of affairs. But certainly the genocide still does play into our daily life one way or another.
And you still find bones?
We still find bones, not as much as we used to. And the government and the community has done a really good job trying to recover bones and have them laid to rest in one of the many, many memorial sites around the country.
With all of the problems in Rwanda, and you see the effects of the amputations and people walking around Kigali even today, what is the source of the empowerment that allows you and your programs and the team that you work with to make progress on something as intractable as systemic poverty?
Well, one of the things that we've really got in our favor is that nearly half of the entire Rwandan population at this point was born after the genocide. So the memories of the genocide, while being part of this national dialogue, of course it's there and it's on people's minds, has faded into the past to some degree, and everyone is quite a bit more focused on the future, on getting jobs, on getting education, on the sorts of normal daily challenges that people all over the world face. But I've spent a lot of time talking with young people in Kigali today and asking them, how is it possible that you can work with people whose parents literally were responsible for the deaths of your parents? And they say, we just don't have time. We don't have time to think about the hatred and to dwell on it. We've got too many other responsibilities. We've got a job by day. We're studying in university by night. There's just not enough time.
How do they think of you in Rwanda? Are you some kind of doctor? Are you some kind of minister? Are you just the crazy chef who puts ginger in everything?
I think we are the crazy Americans who, against all odds, have decided to spend the last decade living in Rwanda. Not crazy in the sense that we think that there's anything crazy about it, because we love Rwanda, we love the people, we love the climate, we love the quality of life. It's safe. Our kids can run around the streets at all hours and we don't have to worry about them. Not crazy in that sense. Crazy in the sense that lots of Rwandans look at us and say, why would you give up New York City to be here? And for us, our answer is that we really fell in love with Rwanda, and that's where our lives are.
Tell me a story of when you got it, about the frustrations and the puzzles that you couldn't figure out in the beginning, and you suddenly, oh, here's how to do it.
Well, it's been a slow growing process for me because as an academic originally, someone who studied development, of course I thought that I had the answers when I first got there on the ground. But over time, I really learned from the locals and I learned from my country directors. There's a guy named Blaise who headed up Health Builders for quite a few years. And it was Blaise who really explained to me that doing great public health work wasn't about working in the capital. It was about working in the field and in the health centers where most people get treated. Although my inclination was, let's save who we can, let's work on this clinically, he said, don't be a doctor. Don't be a traditional public health worker. Let's go in like managers. Let's make sure that they've got QuickBooks for their accounting. Let's make sure that the nurses are getting paid on time. And those approaches in our public health work have paid off in spades in terms of the health outcomes people care about, in terms of child's lives saved and mother's lives saved. But it's not sexy to go in and say, hey, we're supporting accounting. We're supporting human resources. We're making sure that they've got a good financial plan. And that's something I learned from him.
And what about the restaurant? What's the favorite dish?
Oh, I've got so many favorites. But we've got a wonderful new chef from San Francisco who just started up a couple weeks ago. She made a fantastic filet mignon with a carrot puree and some caramelized onions on top that I had the other evening. That was one of the best pieces of meat that I've ever had. And of course, it's very, very free range.
So solve poverty in Rwanda and be sure to serve filet mignon.
I think that you can go a long way towards solving poverty by creating the sorts of jobs that we're creating. Our servers are some of the best paid in the entire country. And every one of them has got either a university degree or they're working on a university degree. They're supporting siblings. They're still supporting orphans of the genocide, but without ever receiving some check from a charity.
Somebody told you one time that if you live close to the cemetery, you can't cry. Who was that person and what were they trying to tell you?
It's actually a fairly common saying in Rwanda, as you can imagine, in light of the genocide and in light of the fact that literally the whole country is a form of a graveyard and a cemetery. The person I remember best who told me that was Abed, who's been our driver for many, many years. I think his point is that if you try to appreciate and feel the very burden of the genocide all the time, that it's very hard to move on. And that today we shed our tears for the tragedies that continue. And there are many. And they are manifold. But for us, I think we look at that past and we're inspired. We take a look at Rwanda today, 20 years out, and think, here's a country that everyone said was going to fail, and it's succeeding. And we have this unbelievable opportunity to be part of making a contribution to the future. So we feel lucky as can be.
Josh Ruxin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Josh Ruxin is a professor at Columbia University's Mailman Center for Public Health, author of 1,000 Hills to Heaven, Love, Hope, and a Restaurant in Rwanda. Tomorrow we'll hear from one of the survivors from the killings 20 years ago, Eugenie Mukeshimana. Today she runs the Genocide Survivors Support Network here in the U.S., which strives to give immigrant genocide survivors the legal and social help they need to rebuild their lives. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.